We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs like you. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Stephen Mead, my old friend from years ago in Chicago.
How are you?
Back then, we met through Michael Jordan, as a matter of fact.
Many years ago at one of his events.
He is the founder of Big Bamboo, which has nothing to do with bamboo, right? Why the name? Well, it does.
Well, kind of. Bamboo to me was a metaphor for growing businesses. If you know the story of Chinese bamboo, it actually doesn't grow for the first 4 years. Mm-hmm. But in that period of time, you have to water it. And what's really happening below the surface is the roots and infrastructure are growing to support the massive growth of the bamboo. And that to me was a metaphor for business and life. You have to be consistently growing and trying to get better and have a foundation so when success happens, you're actually ready to support it.
And adjust to the environment and all that kind of stuff. Do you always want to be an entrepreneur?
I learned early on I'm actually unhirable. So I don't know that I always wanted to be. But in going through interviews at college, I just wasn't having much success. So I started my own retail stores in college and have just constantly started businesses since then.
What kind of interviews did college put you to?
Well, a lot of it is personality tests. So they're looking for conformity into a box and following rules and thinking within a set of confines. And as I learned later, I spent 6 years in sales training for financial services, and I wouldn't hire myself today. I would hire me to do one thing and one thing only, which is business development.
Right.
Anything outside of that, I'm not a conformist. I don't follow rules. So I'm not a good employee. And that often comes across when you're doing, you know, these psychological interviews. They're looking for a quick no.
Right.
And I was a quick no in college.
My high school counselor wrote of me, he will never fit into a normal working condition.
Yeah.
He wrote that down.
And if you learn that early on, then you use it to your advantage
What the hell is this?
Yeah.
What's normal? Certainly not this business. So you didn't want to do the 9-to-5 deal, right?
I like the 9 to 11.
Right.
9 in the morning till 11 at night.
All right. Okay. And 8 hours for lunch.
I have a lot of these little quips and sayings, Pat. Too often I eat what's called Blinner, mm-hmm. which is breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
At the same time, yeah. Well, that's healthy in some sense. What did you do before this?
Before Big Bamboo?
Yeah.
I did retail stores in college. So going back, I wrote 3 books when I was in my 20s on credit improvement. And I actually had an infomercial when I was 21 called Give Yourself Credit. So dating back to the early days of direct response and infomercial, and I raised $160,000 and convinced a group called Hawthorne Media.
Oh, sure.
And Tim and Kevin Harrington, long before they did Home Shopping Network, they had a company called Quantum. And I convinced them to do my media buying, and I was 21 years old with no idea what I was doing, but it was an interesting experience.
It's frightening that most people start that way. Have a good gift of gab, right?
I have a gift of gab, and I have the ability to sell air, meaning I can sell ideas long before there's any substance behind them.
As long as you can back it up.
Correct.
So here we are at Big Bamboo. By the way, what's the worst job you ever had?
The worst job?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think backwards. The worst job I ever... In high school and college, my parents were, and my grandparents and my aunt and uncle, everybody was in construction. Mm-hmm. So I used to work in the summers in the Ford plants, 120 degrees, Kansas City, 12-hour days. Ugh. And it was a brutal, dirty, nasty job. But it allowed me to work for 6 or 8 weeks over the summer and save enough money to not have to work during school.
Right.
So there was a bit of a trade-off. But yeah, those were hard times. And it was interesting as well. The learning experience was every guy that was in there said, make sure you don't do this the rest of your life.
That's what my dad said to me. I worked at John Morrell and Company, the meatpacking plant.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I shoveled hamburger for a summer. And it's like shoveling bubble gum. It's impossible. And I don't think I've ever been so tired in my life at the end of a day.
Yeah, it's great money when you're young, but boy, when the old guys are saying, don't do this.
So what was the initial thought behind this, behind Big Bamboo?
When I say I got lucky, I mean, everything with opportunity is luck, timing, and persistence. But I had a company that we took public in 99 that was the first master merchant in the world. It's technology that became PayPal. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate to have enough financial resources not to not ever have to work again, but to sort of do my own thing. And this was in probably early 2000. And what I didn't want to do is I didn't want to have a website that was stephenmead.com, look how cool I am.
Right.
So I needed to come up with a name. And Big Bamboo became the name that I built all of the other companies underneath. So Big Bamboo is not actually a company. It's just the holding system that every company I starts underneath it. I already have enough, you know, hubris and ego. I didn't need to run around with my own domain name.
Well, I have an ego too. That's why I'm going to say we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Pat O'Brien. This is Business Rockstar. Stephen Mead is our rock star today. Big Bamboo, a bunch of companies underneath is
sure.
The umbrella, right? So how did you know this would work?
Which one?
Big Bamboo, the whole thing.
Well, I didn't know it would work, but I start with a different premise. I have a weird way of thinking where I invert the process of every company. So to begin with, I have a list of 12 what I call lifestyle criteria, is what I want my life to be like if it's a perfect outcome. And nothing's ever perfect, but as an entrepreneur, I said, if I'm going to work this hard, I at least, if it works, want to have 9 or 10 or 12 of these desired outcomes.
Right, so you want the cash and prizes.
So first, every company I start has to have some of those things. And one's financial, but some are the types of people I like to be around, the services I like to do. And then every company I start has to give me at least 9 of those 12 criteria as an opportunity if it works. And then I invert the process, and every company I start, I go into it saying, why won't this work? So I don't go in saying, hey, here's my next new company.
Right.
Pat, isn't this great? I'm like, Pat, you've been doing this business a long time. Why won't this work? What am I missing? You know, why will they say no? What's my competition? I'm more curious of the true roadblocks.
Right.
Because if I'm going to put my time and effort and my money into the company, I want to go into it under the negative premise of why it won't work.
What's the common denominator of roadblocks?
The biggest one, and it's something we're trying to solve in a new initiative with the state, is I think most companies, when they're early on, run around and they're always looking for money, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that can happen, but the theory is, hey, give me capital. If I get capital, it gives me credibility, and the credibility hires a contact and a sales, and then I go get a customer. Well, the first question that's asked when you're trying to raise funding to expand a company is, who's your customer? So my premise is you invert the model, and how do you find a customer first? Capital follows customers. And so every company we start, I will pre-sell the customer base sometimes for a year or two to try and line customers up before we even have anything built.
So what kind of customers are you looking for?
Well, the current one we have called Magma, which is a magic moment. It's a publishing tool. Our current customers are Dick Clark Productions. So it's brands, celebrities, musicians, entertainers, book authors, any sort of business, brand, or celebrity that has something they want to sell or promote.
So when you get started with a company, what do you get from them, and what do you ask for from a company?
Well, all of the companies under Big Bamboo are mine. Mm-hmm. So I start, it's basically 100% of the company. And then I build it. And my joke is, and again, they're not all politically correct and they're a little squishy, but my joke is I'm good at having babies. I just don't like to raise them. Because people are like, oh, which company do you like the best? That's like saying, which kid do you like the best?
Right.
But in order to have a good company, I don't want a nanny running it. I want to send it to boarding school and get called at graduation or when they're in trouble. And so what that means is I'll start a company, I'll bring people in to kind of help me form it, build it, and run it, and eventually I'll send it off and let somebody else run the company, and then I'll start another one. So all of the ideas are mine. I bring the management teams in to actually run them once they get far enough along to be sustainable.
Now, Magma, which is cool, How do you find people that want to get that, or do you sell that?
Yeah, it's an interesting premise. The Magma, we've inverted again the process. I tend to flip business models on their head. So I'm not going after to build an audience to bring to you. I can sit with you and say, hey, Pat, how big's your Facebook audience? These are people who you know like
right.
you. How big's your Twitter audience? Are you using Google Plus? here, take Magmo, create a magic moment of the person you interviewed, and share that with your existing audience. So for me, my relationships are more on the brand side. We brought in the CEO of Saatchi, the chief marketing officer of the NBA, the co-founder of Audible.com at Amazon. These are all guys who've invested in the company. Their relationships to the brands are very strong. So we've got direct access, fortunately, to Red Bull, Starbucks, Aston Martin, Dick Clark Productions, NFL, really, really strong brand opportunities. But to me, that's where the opportunity is, because that brand already has built an audience. We just give them a tool to tell better stories.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Back in a minute.
Question: do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE, 844-91-BIBLE.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Our guest is Stephen Mead. We go back to the heyday of the Chicago Bulls. I think we met with Jordan, right? Some golf tournament or something?
We met with Michael, and you and I were trying to figure it out. It would have been late 80s, early 90s at a tournament Michael was having.
And I haven't changed one inch.
You know, I produced the picture that I was fortunate. Thank you for taking it. And the difference between you and I was you were wearing a suit back then, and I still had hair, so things eventually changed.
Well, the suit was free, so things haven't changed. So Magmo, which is a magic moment, and it's Bamboo, Big Bamboo is the company, the umbrella. So try to explain Magmo. So I'm a company, and I've got a bunch of pictures and cute kids. Let's use a celebrity we were talking about.
Sure. So we were talking about Mark Wahlberg or Zach Brown. I'll use Zach as a musician because it's a little easier. So as a musician, you have six things you want to sell: music, tickets, merchandise, fan club. Usually you have a charity. There's different things you're trying to promote. If you post pictures in Facebook, people click at it. They can kind of flip and wave. Instagram, people click like and wave at you. Hey, Zach, we like your picture. Right. Doesn't do anything. Twitter's just words. Magmo, for the magic moment, says, I'm Zach Brown. Here we are writing our next song. You want to buy our music? Click here. And what Magmo does is it publishes into Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus. So
with a push of a
with a one touch.
Yeah.
So that audience for Zach's about 22 million people.
Mm-hmm.
We're giving him a tool that says create some content that's brandable, attach the offer for people to click to buy music, and then when it goes into Facebook, that's your audience. People don't download the app. They see the picture and says, "Oh, you want to buy my next song?" When they click on the photo, it opens in a browser. It's just like YouTube. Mm. You and I can view YouTube videos. We don't have to download an app.
Right.
Magmo is the same way. If somebody clicks, it opens in a browser. They flip through, read the story, can click to the offer, all without a download.
And how do you monetize that?
Well, at the brand level, it's easy because our relationships are with the music companies and with the Amazons of the world, where we get paid when somebody clicks through to buy something.
Mm-hmm.
All right, if we bring it down to a smaller audience, you know, where some of the business rock star audience might be, any brand out there, we've built a tool that almost works like Google AdWords, right? That brand, that restaurant, that small business owner can create a story. That back panel, we get paid per view, just like a banner ad might, or per click like a Google ad. And we're rolling out with brands that want to sign up with us we're giving them their first 1,000,000 views free for 6, 9, or 12 months, depending on the activity.
So is it hard to explain it to people? You can show it to them.
If we show them, yeah, again, I have a few too many sayings, but one of my sayings is the mind is like water, path of least resistance. So I have to be very careful, and especially as an entrepreneur, if I say we're like Instagram on steroids, people immediately go, well, how many downloads do you have? If I say we're a publishing tool like Hootsuite, well, what's your data? So we have to be careful.
Everybody's put these labels on everything, you know, how many followers they have.
And so whenever you create something new that's never been done, you have to try and explain it in a way that people will get it, but they don't. You don't want them to understand it in a frame of reference that isn't what you're doing. You know, so this one's been a little difficult. We've played around with some of the messaging. At the end, it's easier just to show it. Hey, click here, build this,
publish. Yeah, I mean, once I saw it, I got it right away.
Yeah.
And how hard is it to find new customers?
Customer side's easy. The capital side's a little more difficult because you're trying to raise money to build companies in advance of a lot of the companies coming on. But for us, the customers, almost every brand, I mean, we've got a list of 140. Almost the world path's driven by narcissists. Right? Look at me. Look at my pictures. Look at my food. Look at my product. Look at my drink. Look at my kid.
Right.
And the other side,
I'm in the TV business.
Well, but it's also driven by voyeurs where we go and look at stuff. So I've built in a positive way the Uber narcissist tool.
Right.
It's a way for brands to promote their content and have an offer, or even the consumer. There's a consumer side to this where a consumer can download Magmo and say, hey, here's the magic moment of, you know, me with my new pet or at the beach with my family. So the customer side isn't the challenge. It's scaling a company and getting funding in advance of the scale. And that's always the gap you have to close in any business.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Stephen Mead is here from Big Bamboo, which is an umbrella for a lot of companies. When do you stop putting out new ideas?
Well, I don't know if I'll ever stop.
When do you feel you have the one that will keep you focused the longest?
Well, each one I start, I'll spend a couple of years in. So again, I have two or three that are up and running. I have the one Magmo, the main one I'm on now. There's two or three projects that we're trying to find people to run. And then there's a long list of ideas I'll never get to because they're not big enough for me to have interest in building them or scaling them, but I may find somebody that wants to run them. So to me, my ideas are kind of like a car that sits in a garage. And I can only drive one car at a time, but I might have two or three sitting there that if I can find somebody else that wants to step in and drive it, I'll try and build a management team around it.
Is that how you pitch the business?
Well, Big Bamboo, I don't pitch because it's just the holding company.
Right.
Each company I start is its own independent entity.
I'm talking about Magmo.
Yeah. So Magmo, I'm actually the CEO. We just started interviewing new CEOs to run it. Because in my opinion, everything has at least three CEOs when you're building a company. The startup, entrepreneur, the guy who has the idea and is really passionate about it. And when a company gets to a certain point, you have to become more executional and operational and managerial with people. And then there's the growth CEO. I've built the company far enough where it's starting to need that managerial operational guy, and that's not me. So in conversations with venture guys, it's always interesting because I know where my skill set and limitations are, and I don't have conversations where they're worried about replacing me when the company grows. I'm already trying to find my replacement to drive it to the next level.
You love starting businesses and keeping them going. What are the two or three suggestions you would have for a budding entrepreneur?
Entrepreneur, number one, know your strengths and weaknesses. So be really fair in your assessment of what you're good at, because whatever you're really good at is also what you're weak at. So you need to build teams around you to supplement all the areas that you're weak in. Number two.
And be able to admit that, by the way.
That's why I said you have to have your own self-assessment of what you're good at, and not everybody does. They're not willing to admit their limitations or their faults.
Right.
Number two, always focus on the customer acquisition side. What am I building for the customer? How can I get to them? Take meetings early and often with companies, even if you're not ready. under the premise of this is what I'm building, does it work, what do you think? And number three, go into everything with why won't this work? Why won't this work? What am I doing wrong? What am I missing? Who's gonna tell me no? You don't wanna go in presenting your baby as your no idea. If you go and say, Pat, look at this, isn't this great? People are gonna patronize you and pat you on the head.
Right.
And then the real world's gonna kick you in the face. I'd rather go and say, Pat, what do you think? Tell me honestly, what am I missing? If you solicit that negative advice, that is much more beneficial than platitudes moving
and
forward.
And it's easier to find the answers then too, because you know what people are thinking.
Right, then if you know where the holes are, that's what you're really trying to build to fill.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, good to see you again.
You too, Pat, thanks so much.
This has been Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien, we'll see you next time.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars. And I'm joined by Tom Patterson. He is the CEO and founder of Motivate, which we'll hear all about in a little bit. But first, can you tell me, did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
That's a great question. I think from the beginning, I thought about the type of work I wanted to do, and I wanted to create a culture that would be filled with friends and vision and fun and energy. So I think I was always inspired to get to a point in my career where I could go do that myself. And I think that's where my entrepreneurial path started.
I think a lot of successful entrepreneurs start with that passion and that why, and they don't even necessarily know at first what form it's going to take. Is that true for you?
I think for a lot of folks, and I'll have to be honest, there's a tinge of ego that has to deal with who am I in the world. And I think there's a pathway a lot of entrepreneurs see where, wow, I'm a CEO, I'm going to get founded. It's best when you take that energy early in your career coupled with something that is more meaningful, but it's also tough for people to find something they're super meaningfully connected to before they start to mature and become more soulful. I found that like my decisions on what I'm doing for entrepreneurship change based on the phase of life that I'm in. And I would say at the beginning of my career was a little bit more about being someone, and I think now it's more about what can I provide to the world that's valuable. So I don't ever want to say that I think it's a static process. I think it's kind of dynamic.
Is it more fulfilling now that you're asking yourself, what can I do for the world and for people?
Yeah, I think that a lot of entrepreneurs tie so much of their self-esteem into their product being perfect earlier on. And as you mature as an entrepreneur, you want to do things because of the meaning it has and about the learning you get. And you don't tie your ego and your self-esteem to any one experiment or any one thing you're doing, which gives you great flexibility to listen, to be more open to getting feedback. And it speeds you through the process because you're actually being honest with yourself about what you're building. And I think when you're connected to where your heart is, that creates this really powerful combination. I'm moving towards something that's more about me and it's helpful, and I'm not allowing the ego that blocks me from learning quickly to get in the way.
Well, one thing I think all entrepreneurs can agree upon is that they're busy. So do you have any tricks for being more productive?
This is, I think, the biggest issue. And I think becoming an entrepreneur now is so much harder. I was just talking to a friend today, and he said that people no longer go to bars in their social life to meet people. It's all dates now set up through online stuff. And so, for example, if you're an entrepreneur that's single, your whole social life is set up with all this distraction of information and things that exist. And I share with you that as just one aspect of someone's life. We have all this other interruption that comes in through social media. I think what's really important for an entrepreneur now is how do they tune out these distractions that exist in their life that can be all-consuming. One quick hack that I have done recently is I've taken all my emails, my direct emails that come to me every day, and they're all bundled together now in one email that I read instead of having to kind of get interrupted by all those emails that are mixed with my business emails.
So streamline it. Look at them all at one time.
Totally.
Like how many times a day?
Yeah, just I look at now anything that's non-business just once. And
wow.
In the past, it was probably interrupted 20 to 30 times.
Yeah.
And so I'm sharing with you that as a little viewpoint that there's all these little things that we can do that give us more time to focus on our business.
Because there's always that reset time, too. And
yeah, so every time
you get... So just do that once.
Right. Every time you get interrupted, right, you're out of the mode.
Totally.
And there's this great guy named Stephen Kotler. He's doing work with Google now about being in the zone or getting into flow state. Flow state only works when you're deeply immersed and uninterrupted for enough period of time. All these interruptions in our life keep us from our greatest accomplishments, our greatest ability to be creative, because we get interrupted on the way to our flow state. So an entrepreneur's most important thing is to find lots and lots of time where they can think in an uninterrupted fashion.
I've even heard some entrepreneurs take it a step further and not just not look at email, but turn off their phone, tell their employees, hey, don't disrupt me for the next few hours. Do you think that's effective too?
For sure. One of the biggest hacks, and I don't know whether it's Tim Ferriss or one of the other folks that's helping people hack their life now, talks about the fact that on the way from kind of being obsessive about your product, a great CEO, founder, entrepreneur needs to basically delegate everything that they don't need to do so they can find times to reflect on their business and think about where the competitive market is, think about what they need to do for funding, think about how to be strategic about their next hires. And when you're in that state of constantly being interrupted and stress without this free time, you're not thinking with your whole brain. You're in this fight or flee mode and you're reacting to things. So absolutely, solitude is a really important thing to get, and it gives us a chance to, you know, kind of reflect on all the things that are going on in our life.
Absolutely. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Tom Patterson. He's the CEO and founder of Motivate. And you have a ton of experience when it comes to funding companies and working with investors. So what is your number one piece of advice for somebody who's starting a company to raise funds?
So you move through different dimensions from the beginning of an idea to later on to future rounds of financing. The most important thing is you're going to be judged early on from investors on who you are, your track record, the team that you've built, but most importantly, the vision you can create to get people inspired by. An entrepreneur is constantly trying to do something to get more value out of not having the resources. And so what I mean by that is, even before I go get funding, I need to hire a CTO, someone to help me build my product. That person typically now is probably either employed or is looking at many other options. So the first thing I can do as an entrepreneur is be inspiring. And inspiring needs to be connected to a mission or a purpose of what you're going to create. But it also means that I've done the research about the space that I want to be in and have customer testimonials or people that will buy it that are telling me this is super valuable to me. So I don't know if it's a non-obvious piece, but I think it's pretty obvious. you need to kind of have your story straight. I think you asked me, what's your 30-second pitch? Well, a good entrepreneur is constantly practicing 30-second pitch and then asking mm-hmm. people, why didn't you get it? Like, why wasn't it good? Mm-hmm. So that would be my biggest advice. Know your story.
And be willing to take advice from other people on yeah. how to improve that story.
Totally, totally. We're insatiable. And I think, what did they say? The Buddha says something to the effect of, the child's mind of learning is the state we want to be in, because then we're curious and we're actually open to becoming better, bigger, more mature people. And sometimes in life, I think we close that off because of different things that have happened, ego, defensiveness, stress. And as long as we are open-minded that we're imperfect, we wind up going faster because we're not blocking anything from coming in.
Mm-hmm. Now, you touched on the importance of having a really great, strong team. What is your method for hiring good people and then, of course, keeping them?
The most important thing is to understand what someone loves to do. And that doesn't mean that at times as an entrepreneur or being in a founding team, you don't have to do stuff that you don't want to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have to go get lunch, or sometimes I have to go to Office Max in the past to kind of get us supplies. Those are probably things that I don't probably love to do repetitively, but stuff that has to be done. But ultimately, a CEO needs to work on their own self-awareness to understand themselves and what they're great at doing, which then gives you a lens to look at other people and to ask the right questions to understand what they love to do. And if you can couple the connection to your mission or vision for the organization and truly understand what this person gets into flow with and that that's valuable to you, then you can construct a team where it's effortless for those folks to go work. And you need to do that because entrepreneurship is really hard. It's a lot of failure. It's a lot of rejection. And those are gifts, because those are gifts that you can now react to that tell you about yourself and say, well, what was I missing? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you should focus on any one thing that was said, but you look at it in aggregate and say, you know what, I was wrong, or wait, I was right, or somebody said something different, and that's the opportunity I should go to.
So part of keeping those good employees we were talking about is, of course, creating a nice work culture and inserting a little bit of fun into the workplace, too. How do you do that?
The most important thing, I think, is what we shared a bit earlier around finding places where people get into flow. I think, as all of us as humans, we want to be recognized for being valuable. The way to recognize someone and being valuable is to pay attention and to connect the work they do to its impact on the organization. We just had a chat from a gentleman named Alan Mulally, who is the CEO of Ford. And he was, I don't know if he was sharing last night or had read in his book, one of the things that he tried to do was help people understand what the company's mission was and where it was on those things that they needed to achieve on the mission. And what that did is it helped bring a light on people on how they could affect that thing that was important, and to be recognized for that, of having improved that, that makes us feel like we have purpose in terms of what we're doing. So kind of a long-winded answer.
Connect them to the mission.
Connect them mm-hmm. to the mission.
Awesome. Thank you so much to my guest, Tom Patterson, CEO and founder of Motivate. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
And now, a Business Rockstars Minute. What business structure is right for you? I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. One of the more important decisions before starting a business is what legal structure to choose. The simplest way to start is a sole proprietorship. With a sole proprietorship, your business earnings are taxed only once. This is for one individual who owns and operates the business. A partnership is when a business is owned and operated by several individuals. There's general partnerships and limited partnerships. It's best to consult with a business attorney to decide which is right for your business. There's also the more complex corporation. It's also one of the most expensive business structures. A corporation is an independent legal entity, separate from its owners. When you finally decide on the business structure, remember to reassess after a time, as laws are always subject to change. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE, 844-91-BIBLE.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 0707. And
building a product versus building a brand. What's the difference? Evan Dobson's going to tell us. He's the CEO and founder of Wisp Industries. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Evan, take it away. What's the difference?
Well, early on, you come up with an idea for a widget, a product. So I'm going to go take it to market, and all of a sudden you give it some identity, and it comes to life. And the next thing you know, you go, hey, I need a different size. I need a different variation. Next thing you know, you're sitting in front of a line of products.
Okay.
And then you start thinking about, well, wait a minute. I don't just want to sell a widget and to see how many I can sell because they have shelf lives. Brands don't have shelf lives.
Like Nike, Coca-Cola,
brands
like that.
Exactly. Okay. I mean, the big, you know, and that's what companies are looking for. They want a brand that no matter what you put underneath that brand, it may evolve and change over, you know, a short period of time, that shelf life, so to speak.
Yeah.
But the brand is still going to be there. But
that's the real value.
That's the absolute value.
Yeah. I don't care about the Nike shoes. It's the Nike swoosh symbol that's the value.
It's 100% the value. And that's Phil did an amazing job creating that identity around it. And so that's, you know, in its inceptive stage. But that is the focus I've been on since day one, and I've never relinquished from it.
So let's talk about that then. So your biggest thing right now is your product, the Wisp, and it's gone viral, literally.
Really?
You're selling them off the shelves. So the difference for you, though, is your product is massively successful, but that's not what you care about. You care about the brand you're building. So let's talk about the difference, right? A lot of people would be happy with a successful product that's gone viral and selling off the shelves, and they maybe wouldn't even be focused so much on the brand. Talk to us about the difference and what you're planning to do to build a dominant disruptive brand in an industry that hasn't really changed.
If you look at companies like Dyson and things like that, they used innovation to disrupt a vacuum industry, and they made it cool.
And cordless.
Apple's obviously done it with the iPhone and all that, and to say that we're doing that to the broom industry is interesting, but here it is. but when you look at just a product versus that brand, we want to continue to innovate and come up with different creative things and expand that line. So
we were talking about the mini whips, and just some of the other ones that are coming out.
Well, I mean, it's endless.
Yeah.
You know, we have scraper and snow thing. We have so many things, and you can literally get lost in the design stage. So you got to balance that.
And once you've built that brand, I don't care what you come out with. Kind of like Apple, those computers, then music, and then, you know, the iPods and then the iPhones. And in my opinion, as an Apple person, like anything they come out with, I'm interested in. I may not buy it, but I'm at least interested in because they've earned my, the brand has earned my loyalty.
Yes, that's a great point too. Yeah. That's what's so critical about us at Wisp right now is that we've had a big outflow of products out there. And you're always anxious. I'm incredibly anxious right now to make sure that the adoption, A, is smooth because we're asking people to change a little bit and that the manufacturing process, there may be bad apples to get by and I take them very personally and sensitive to that. So our customer service and satisfaction is paramount right now because the perception that's going to come out of this is, oh, they were great products and I want to buy more Wisp stuff. And, or, hey, the customer service was terrible. The product was terrible.
Which unfortunately is what I feel like is the reflection of most big businesses. Maybe I'm speaking from my own opinions and, you know, references, but most big businesses have terrible customer service in my experience. If you call and you get a robot and it takes you 18 minutes, 30 minutes to finally get an answer or to finally hang up, I don't know about you, but to me, that's not good customer service.
No, you're absolutely right. And hence the difference between trying to sell as many widgets down the throat of America or the world as fast as possible and take off and move to the next one. I mean, that's why you see, I've seen on TV stuff, it comes and goes quickly. And and because they know they're not going to be a long-lasting brand, not very meta. Some do, but that never interests me at all. I never wanted to be on that.
And that's what I love, is that you're not just trying to build a product like a lot of people out there, but you've taken your idea, turned it into a successful product, but now you're more focused on the brand. CEO and founder of Wisp Industries, Eben Dobson is joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Businesses have products, but not all of them have brands. We're talking about the difference. We've gone over some good things. I think one of the emphases that stood up to me was, you know, product, you buy it, but a brand can have loyalty. You can have brand loyalty in any product the brand comes out with. You could at least be interested in, and obviously, you know, like I was giving my example is, I may not buy all of Apple's products, but when they come out with a new one, I'm sure interested in looking at it. Like I'm gonna go and buy one of their new $4,000 displays. Because I'm just waiting for that new one, the 2017 or the newest one to come out.
Right.
Because I know it's gonna be great and I've used Apple products my whole life. I'm loyal to the brand and I can't say that about many products. And I think that's the power of a brand.
Yeah, and here's a great example for us. And this has been a challenge to us early is because it's such a, our space is so commoditized. So it's really never been a buying decision or a shopping decision.
If you need a broom, you just get one.
What's the difference in that one and that one? You just, I need one to clean up.
You probably just buy the cheapest broom.
Right.
For most people.
We're changing that. We want to have you make a buying decision based on perception of the company, the value, and the backbone of that company. And that is what we've built right now, and we're excited about that, and we're going to get better. We know we're going to make mistakes, but we're going to improve every time we make one. But most importantly is that when you see a Wisp brand, you're going to know that you're going to have not only a superior product, it's going to cost a little bit more maybe, but I, you know, I'd love to share with everyone out there, you know, we've invested in the product too. You know, we want it to say Wisp, we want it to work. And that is the exciting part. And we're going to grow it. We're going to grow the Wisp brand.
It sounds funny, but when you were giving the example earlier here, it sounds weird even saying it, but I feel like using the Wisp would be fun. Like, brooming isn't fun because you got to bend over and you got the stupid thing. Yours,
it's
you can
so
stand
funny
on
you
it.
And
you, it's just like, it seems like it'd be fun. I haven't used it yet. That one's mine, you said, so I'm going to hold you to that. But it seems like it's going to be fun. Like, it really does.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get people, you know, false pretenses here. We're still cleaning up. But at the same time, we have thousands of videos of kids using it, or any age can use it. It's so light and so smartly, so smart and efficient. We call it dancing with your room.
That's what I was going to say. If you put music on, it seems it like it'd be just like, it'd be easy. You never have to bend over or anything. You step on the little thing, you scoop it in, you brush it off. That's the power of your brand, is you guys are building something that I think is a reflection of the quality and the care that you've put into it. It's not like, it's just a broom, and it's just, no, you guys have taken it and you're like, we're going to make this thing better. We're going to make it legit, which I love. Pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much.
As always, I'm excited to see the Wisp blow up.
All right, thank you so much.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. Connecting a community of entrepreneurs is what we do. So you can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.